The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Good to be back in the studio. Took a little hiatus yesterday out of town working and not enjoying it. I guess I was enjoying it, but I was at a golf tournament, working a golf tournament for our parent company, Radio Alabama. I was not able to play. Nobody let me swing the golf club, but that's okay. We were up there working and back today and excited to be back in the studio. Alongside me, as always, on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, your favorite uncle, Uncle T-Bone. Good to see you once again, brother. How are things?
Yeah, good to be seen. Glad to be back in studio every day. I think we're getting a little closer and closer. Post-lightning, AL, as I like to call it, from last Saturday. And hopefully have everything back to normal here heading into the 4th of July, obviously, and then into football season. So I know we've got the text hotline running. You did mention before show that the phones are sort of working.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. So phone lines are up and running. It is a temp fix while we get the main equipment worked on. All right, that's all still getting fixed, but we do have a phone line. So, good news is you can call in 334-321-1390. I will say, if you are calling in and it just rings over and over and over again, hang up and call back or give it a few minutes because we only have the one line open right now. So, you can call in. You're going to connect automatically. We can't screen it, so we're just going to have to throw it to you, and we'll get to you as quickly as possible. But we do have a phone line open, 334-321-1390. Call in. Give us your thoughts, your opinion, your comments, questions, and concerns. We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. And as you mentioned, Uncle T-Bone, we do still have our on-the-line text box that you can reach out to us as well. If you don't want to call in, don't want to talk, you can always text us in our on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Lots to get to today, as we are 87 days away from the kickoff of Auburn football. We have a lot of recruiting things we need to talk about. We have a softball update, as there is now an announcement on the new head coach, or should I say head coaches, for Auburn softball. No Jordan Hill today. He's out of town this week. It's been kind of crazy the last few weeks, but we're going to get him back on hopefully next week for our weekly segment and all things Georgia from Dogs247 and our good friend Jordan Hill. So we will get him back on next week. We also have some recruiting news in Tuscaloosa that we need to get to today. And then Auburn apparently has a top five toughest schedule in college football. We'll get to that in the show today as well. But again, you can call us 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067. All sorts of recruiting things going on right now, Uncle T-Bone, for Auburn football. After a big weekend that saw multiple five stars on campus, okay, guys that Auburn is going after. They are very much in with these guys. And it's not the first time we've put these names out there. Caleb Cunningham and Naeem Offord, our friends over at 247, Jason Caldwell and Christian Clemente have been talking about these guys. I know Brian Matthews at Auburn. I mean, everybody's been talking about them after this weekend because there were questions on where Auburn truly stood with these two five-stars in 2025, and there's no question coming out of the weekend, Auburn is very much in it. Cunningham said Auburn's in the lead. Offord is right there, too. these guys are interested in Auburn, and Hugh Freeze and the Tigers have a really good chance to be in and land these guys when they finally commit.
You got to believe that with this staff, that if they're going to host somebody on an important recruiting weekend, and every one of those weekends now, well, they're all important, but these are extra important heading into a Big Cat weekend. You saw this last year where Auburn was when Hugh and the staff finally got their sea legs under them after being hired and going through that initial recruiting class, that they just started beating the bushes with top talent from all around the country, and we're getting some names and some star accolades of players that, you know, we quite hadn't seen. We might see one here or one there, but putting together 5 to 8 to 10 guys a weekend that are all 4 and 5 stars above, and the likes of Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson, and Georgia were all recruiting, and they started building these this momentum in June of last year with these visits, and it all came to a crescendo right there at Big Cat Weekend, and when Perry Thompson flipped and everyone jumped in the pool, and the only thing that was missing was the foam from like a Mexican resort pool party. I mean, it was on after that, and Auburn got back in business recruiting-wise. I thought about that a lot today. I was coming in, flipping guys like DeMarcus Riddick, the 5-star linebacker from Clanton.
There was
Georgia.
No way that was going to happen. Though,
oh, no, no, no. He was going to go to Alabama, Uncle T. That's all I heard. And oh, there's no way Perry Thompson's going to flip. He's from Mobile, and that's Alabama land. That's REC land down there, Uncle T. And he not only flipped, he stayed. And the likes of the Robinson kid from the linebacker out of Tuskegee, who Georgia was massively high on, and flipping, you know, and getting back into competing and recruiting. So you're going to continue to see these big-time names, mm-hmm. like just like last year, maybe even more talent now that they've really made some inroads in recruiting and made a lot of relationships back, especially in the state of Alabama, where the previous staff have let these coaching relationships go.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to believe that any of these people that are coming in really and truly are completely interested in Auburn. Now, you're never going to get them all, but at least there's a chance, right? These are big names. These are top receivers, top defensive backs. They got some big names coming in this weekend, including a pair of Alabama commits. Jacob, watch out.
Uh-oh.
So I like what I'm seeing, and I think that they're going to follow that same pattern as they did last year. Bring in heavy hitters, bring in big-time recruits to visit, build up some momentum, and then everybody rally again at Big Cat Weekend, and let's see what happens.
I'm curious on where Auburn fans stand with these two guys in particular. We're going to get to those guys that are visiting this weekend that are Alabama commits. We'll have that later for you in the show. Are Auburn fans more excited in recruiting with cornerback Naeem Offord, the Ohio State commit, or is it with Caleb Cunningham, the big-name receiver out of the state of Mississippi?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's probably on the receiver just because of the offensive side that tends to be where fans get a little bit more excited and hyped up about, and especially right now for Auburn in the receiving room and in the recruiting rankings when it comes to receivers. Our friend Christian Clemente, who joins the show periodically talking about recruiting, he's mentioned this numerous times, but this is just a snippet from a piece that him and Jason did today. It says, if Auburn were able to land Caleb Cunningham and pull him away from the Mississippi schools, he said, and this is quote from him, well, that would solidify that it would be probably the best receiver corps in Auburn history, is what he says. That again, if Auburn lands Cunningham, you've got maybe the best wide receiver corps in Auburn history, at least on paper. And I don't think he's wrong. I think that's a very safe statement to make because of what Auburn has not had in the past. There's always been those, and I say this all the time, there's always been one or two right? There's always been one or two guys that Auburn has had that have been good, but they've never just had a room full of them like this. And if you continue to do that and you bring in what I think is the biggest or the best wide receiver recruiting class in the history of Auburn football this past season, mm-hmm. and then you add on to that with another five-star in Cunningham and you continue to do that, Auburn fans are excited about that and what the potential could be and how that could look for the next 10 years.
Oh, it's a game changer. You got a stable of athletes at a particular position, which has become one of the most drafted first-round positions in the NFL. You know, 20 years ago, everybody's looking to take that tailback, right? But, you know, as your weapon, the game's changed, and you see receivers going off the board early that, I mean, they're great, and I couldn't be more happy for them, but – you know, sometimes I have to question some of these first-round receiver picks, but it's just because they are so necessary in today's game.
I mean, look at the NFL. What's his Justin Jefferson just signed a $110 million guaranteed contract in the NFL. $140 million. He's the highest-paid non-quarterback in the history of the league, and he's a wide receiver.
Bingo. I mean, the case is closed. Wide receivers are maybe the hottest commodity on the market right now in all of football. In the NFL and in recruiting, outside of just having that stud quarterback, which you always got to have.
Sure.
At least somebody. But if you can have four stud receivers and just someone who can get the ball to them as a game distributor, and I'll take my chances with that as well. But you've got to have the players. And, folks, we you know, look, you're talking about the four guys that came in, the freeze four, almost made five of Ryan Williams. You know, I don't know how much that cost Tide, but it cost him a pretty penny. And then you got two guys that came in the transfer portal this year, and Robert Lewis from Georgia State, Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you got some Cam Brown still left on the roster from the past. I mean, and you got the kid, Sam Jackson, that came over from California. He's a baller.
Not to mention Rivaldo Fairweather so at the tight end spot.
How could you not say, just looking on paper – it compared to wide receiver. And you can't really compare the game back when, you know, the wishbone was being run, right?
Sure.
But you got to go back to when you had Era Machado, Obumanu, Anthony Mix, Courtney Taylor, to have this type of potential stable of wide receivers where if one guy comes out, you're not missing hardly a beat if another guy comes in. And you add this Cunningham kid to it, and it's on, mm-hmm. you know. I'll say this. I'm going to take the opposite, though. I think the Naheem Offord guy is a little bit bigger story because, look, Auburn's supposed to beat the hell out of Ole Miss and Mississippi State out of recruits. We're a better football program than them, fact, historically. But now you're going up against Ohio State.
And Georgia, who's been a late push there.
And Georgia. For a guy who's out of your state, 2 hours up the road, Highway 280 Northwest, Birmingham, Alabama, Parker High. And, you know, I don't call it Bammerham for nothing, Jacob. It's a heavy Tide influence up there.
You better believe it.
And you can go up there and you can kind of put a fence around that and lock that kid up. The number one player in the state of Alabama. Go on, Hugh, and do it. Let's go.
So you like the Naheem Offord
kid.
Yes. That gets you more fired
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
Not that Cunningham doesn't, but Offord – and, you know, here's what's fun.
And that's why, and look, you know, it would be one thing, Jacob, had we not had the freeze four last year, too.
Sure.
I mean, you got a couple of guys over there. They're going to be SEC all freshmen. You might have a guy or two that start pushing up into that possibility of being, you know, third, second team, all SEC. They're here, and you got all these other receivers. So there's a bank of those over there, and I'm not saying Auburn's defensive backs are lacking this year, but it would be different had we not signed all those people, and mm-hmm. this was like your guy that's going to change the thing. It's already changed at wide receiver.
Yeah.
So let's change the narrative on, you know, locking up this state and in some places where, you know, historically Auburn not has got shut out but got beat out.
I think that's fair to say, and I don't want to go as far to say that Auburn doesn't need receivers anymore because you can't just quit recruiting a position. That's insane to think that, but – sure, Auburn has a very good group of young receivers that you hope to keep around for the next 2 or 3 years with the guys coming in, and hopefully you continue adding through the transfer portal. And so if it came down to which these have no bearing on the other, but okay, if you could only have Cunningham at the receiver spot or Alford from the cornerback, the defensive back spot, I mean, I think you're probably hurting more on defensive backs given what is about to be leaving. Yes, you've recruited that well, but shoot, when it comes to corners and safeties and just pure DBs, you can never have enough of those guys.
Well, yeah, because you can never have enough receivers, right?
That's
somebody's got to cover them up.
Yeah, that's
and,
true,
and, you know, you get some high-quality five-star can't-miss talent in your defensive backfield, and they can cover up that receiver for just an extra half second or second. How much better does that make your pass rush?
No doubt. I mean, extremely better.
And so, you know, look, it would be nice, though, to go ahead and get this Cunningham kid on the other hand for me, because then Auburn's beginning to play a game that a lot of bigger programs have been playing against Auburn for a few years now to some smaller programs that Auburn should be playing that game with, and that's called keep away.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not going to Ole Miss. No, you're not going to Mississippi State. You're coming to Auburn, and you're not. We're not going to allow you to have them.
The good thing is Cunningham has put Auburn in his top. He said after this weekend, Auburn is in the lead, but there's a long way to go, on a guy like that. What gets me excited about the Alford kid and the recruitment of him is he's an Ohio State commit. He's committed to Ohio State. Cunningham hasn't committed anywhere. Now, Ole Miss and Mississippi State have been in the lead for a while, but Alford has been committed to Ohio State since early February of this year. So we're going on 4 months that he has been, just over 4 months, that he's been committed to one of the best programs in the country that, with a guaranteed fact, has been spending some of the most money in college football, because that's what Ohio State does. They've got it. They've got the support, they've got the money, they've got the resources, they got everything they need to remain one of the top programs in the country. And so, for a guy like this, why would you not want to go to Ohio State? But Hugh Freeze has made it known that winning the state of Alabama is what he wants to do. Getting the best players in the state, not just winning them from Alabama, but avoiding them and preventing them, in a good way, from going out of state. You don't want the number one player in the state of Alabama going to play at Ohio. Come on. You don't want to see that. Just from a state perspective, take out Auburn, Alabama. You don't want to see the best player go play in Columbus, Ohio. Believe me, I'm from up there. You don't want to play there.
Well, I'm much rather prefer seeing Caleb Downs play in, play for the Buckeyes this year than for Alabama. So,
well,
if they're not going to come to Auburn, don't go to Alabama is what I'm going to tell them. Well, go on and go to Ohio State. it's okay.
That's fair.
It's a lot better for Auburn to finish second to Ohio State than it is to Alabama for a recruit, because A, it's your in-state rival, and B, it's a conference rival, and you gotta at least be on top or close to on top of your own conference before you're going to get in the college football playoff.
334-321-1390. That's the phone number to get through to us. If you want to be a part of the show, you can call in. We also have our text box number, 334-784-1067. Got a text saying, since you are claiming Alabama paid a pretty penny for Ryan Williams, how much do you think Auburn paid for Thompson, who had been committed to Alabama for a while? Look, Auburn did what they had to do. I'm not saying he didn't. Perry Thompson didn't walk into Auburn for free. I mean,
did I say it was illegal for Alabama to have paid Ryan Williams? I don't know why you're getting so upset. Sounds like a disgruntled Alabama fan's got the devil in them this Wednesday. If you can't handle the truth, you might not want to listen to this show, pal.
Well, let's take our first break here in hour number one. Again, phone line is open. Text box always open as well. We have some Auburn news to talk about. The softball program has found its new coaches. Yes, plural. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio. Oh, all right, full transparency. Coming back from break, I just tried to put my headset back on, and it was like almost like a rubber band, and it just smacked myself across the face.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I couldn't do that again if I tried, so maybe I deserved it. Maybe that's just karma for something on this Wednesday. But we do have some Auburn news to talk about. Again, phone line is open, 334-321-1390. Getting some text here today as well, 334-784-1067.
Some interesting text.
Yeah, people fired up on this Wednesday. I love
it. Good.
I love it. That's what we do around here.
What we're here for.
That's right. Well, Auburn news. Auburn has decided and found a new pair of softball coaches. It's been a question we've been getting a lot here on this show. I've had a ton of people calling and texting about what Auburn was going to do for the softball program, as Mickey Dean, no longer the softball coach, said he was stepping down. And so it is a new era in Auburn softball, and John Cohen and the Tigers have gone out and hired Chris and Kate Malvo, okay? They are announced as co-head coaches, all right? So that's the Tennessee, from the Tennessee Lady Vols, their softball program. It is the Tennessee hitting coach, Chris Malvo, and his wife, Kate, are both joining the staff. They were assistants at Tennessee. They have now been hired as co-head coaches for Auburn softball, and I'll be honest, I was not expecting this. I was not expecting co-head coaches. I've been reading up and learning a lot about these two coaches during their time at Tennessee. They are considered, Uncle T-Bone, two of the best offensive minds in college softball. They helped Tennessee win back-to-back SEC regular season titles. They also, during their time as assistant coaches at Tennessee, are a part of a program in Knoxville that is top 10 in wins during their time there. So
yeah,
they know what they're doing. They have everything it takes to get results offensively, which is something that Auburn softball really struggled with this past season. I mean, the amount of games they lost 2-0, 3-1, 3-2, like they just couldn't get enough run support for not only one of the best pitchers in college softball and Matty Pinta, but everybody else behind her as well. So you bring in two really big offensive minds as co-head coaches for Auburn softball.
Yeah, it's odd, you know, a little strange, but hey, it's not unheard of. Apparently there's been a couple of these duos and in college softball and women's softball before and worked pretty well. So I don't have any problem with it. You know, I mean, look, John Cohen's paid good money to go out and find the best possible coaches that he thinks the correct fit at Auburn to compete for national championships. Mm-hmm. And if he feels like that, you know, not one but two here, this married couple, the Malvos, is your pathway to get back to the Women's Softball College World Series, more power to them. You know, in a statement on Wednesday, John Cohen, Auburn athletic director, had a quote and said it was obvious that Chris and Kate's synergy was an indomitable force. Pretty strong words from RAD, and I'm going to take his word for it here.
Yeah, that quote goes on to say their contributions to Tennessee's success over the past three seasons are undeniable. We're so excited to welcome Chris, Kate, and their family to Auburn. And for it to be a husband and wife duo stepping in to be the co-head coaches, for the athletic director to say that their synergy was the driving force here, that seems to be a good sign to me. Because, look, I don't know, for all of our listeners out there, I know a lot of you are happily married, and I don't know how many of you would be able to step in and be a co-coach with your significant other. That can't be an easy thing to do. I'm not a married guy, but I've been in my fair share of relationships here and there. I don't know if you could step in. There's not many people that could pull that off. Just to be a coach with your spouse, and now you're going to be co-head coaches running a program together. It's tough, but that's a really special thing, Uncle Tebow.
Yeah, I kind of imagine that they were both like coaches before they got together, and that's how they met, you know, and I guess they have a lot of in common, and their coaching theories and how to push players and how to get your team right and ready for to win softball games, and maybe their personal relationship budded from the fact that they just had a lot in common in their coaching styles and what they do in softball. I'm with you. I mean, it's not the easiest task in the world, I'm sure, to but to take it from someone who's been married for a long time you know, if I were to open up some type of business, I don't think that there would be anybody else that I would want to partner with other than my spouse. So, you know, it's complete trust And, you know, I'm sure that they – I wonder if they take some of these, like, disagreements home and stuff and coach – you should have coached this. You shouldn't
God,
have,
that,
like,
see, that's just, what I'm
just
saying.
Drop
that's
dead
tough.
Knockouts. Or when they leave the facility, it just – it stays there and they go to home life. I mean, that's almost impossible for anybody, especially a man who's stressed out from work, just to leave it all at the front door. But, you know, look, man, more power to them. I mean, if this is what John Cohen thinks is best for Auburn softball – you know, I gotta stand behind it, and I hope it works. And look, you know, what's better than one? Maybe two.
Well, you mentioned facilities. That's where Auburn's got to put some money and figure it out. Auburn softball facilities got to get a facelift, and I think that should be on the very top list of John Cohen. But Chris and Kate Malvo, coming from Tennessee, they will be the co-head coaches of Auburn softball, a question that we've been trying to answer for a long, long time. 30 minutes into hour number one. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Text us, 334-784-1067. Got a lot more to get to when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz. On ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone, and I'm Jacob Goertz. Appreciate you being with us again. Phone line is open. We have just the one, but you can call in 334-321-1390. A reminder, with our system that we're using right now until we get it all upgraded and get it all fixed from the lightning storm and everything, we can't screen it, so we can't actually, you know, talk to you, and you'll be able to hear us. We'll connect to you. It'll connect automatically, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. You can always text us as well on the line text box, 334-784-1067. Well, we've continued to talk about Auburn football and recruiting, but there was something that came out the other day about Auburn football and their upcoming 2024 schedule, which is something you and I have talked about quite a bit, mm-hmm. but there are rankings that say Auburn has a top five schedule, toughest schedule in college football this season. And you and I were kind of discussing this to start, like, before the show started while we were sitting here doing some show prep in the studio and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's just hard for me to believe. And I've always been one that has harped on that and jumped all over that and and really pushed that narrative that Auburn plays and has played and always has played one of the toughest schedules in college football each and every year. But I've also made the claim that this season in particular is the easiest schedule I've seen in my 24 years of life. And so I don't know if Auburn does have a top five toughest schedule in college football this season. What do you think about all that?
You know, I don't – if they do, and this is one of the easier schedules in our lifetimes for Auburn football, then good grief. I mean, you know, I don't see it being that as difficult as a top five schedule. I mean, granted, Alabama and Georgia are both on that. On that schedule, they both are away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just completely brutal for anybody. But there is no LSU. There is no Tennessee. There is no Texas. There is no, what used to be a proud Florida Gator program. I mean, I was coming up, heck, in 1983 alone, Auburn played Texas, Florida State, Alabama, Maryland, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee.
Hmm.
You know, and then went to a bowl game and played Michigan. I think they put every team that they played other than, I believe, Southern Miss that year was ranked at some point in the top 20. And back then, the top 20, you had to be somebody to be in the top 20.
Sure.
And I don't know, man. I just don't see it. I mean, I guess we could go through and compare it to some other teams' schedules. But for me, I mean, this is one of the more manageable Auburn football schedules in 20 years.
I think so. I mean, I really do think so, because just of how Auburn gets, again, you get those five home games to start.
Where was this ranking?
I believe this is from the FPI. This is the FPI. So we talked about the Football Power Index late last week in terms of numbers and kind of some win projections and things like that. But the FPI has ranked the toughest schedules in college football. Listen to this list. Are you ready?
Okay.
Everybody in the country will agree with this, that Florida has the toughest schedule in college football. I mean, it's not even close, the schedule that Florida has to go through. So they have them, Florida at number one, Mississippi State at number two. They have Georgia at number three, Kentucky at four, and Auburn at five. They have Alabama at six. They have Oklahoma at seven. They have Tennessee at eight, Georgia Tech at nine, and Texas at 10. Is there anything that's kind of similar out of those teams there, Uncle T-Bone? Nine of those top 10, do you know what they all have in common?
Well, they're all in the SEC.
They all play in the Southeastern Conference.
And the ninth, the one team that's not out of in the SEC used to be.
And plays the top team from that conference.
You know, I Googled toughest schedules in the NCAA just to try and find this. And actually, there's a list that came up from 247. Why don't we – it does not have Auburn even in the top 15 of its toughest schedules. And the FPI has us at five. That's what I'm talking about. I just think that there's a massive gap to what some people believe could be or the numbers might say. And then kind of the eye test, at least, of ranking these things. They also, though, unfortunately for Florida over at 247, have the Gators at numero uno with the hardest schedule. So I guess that just confirms it, that both of them synergize there. They've got Oklahoma at two, Arkansas at three, South Carolina at four, UCLA at five. We forget that the Bruins will be in the Big Ten now.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech at six. They must have a pretty tough schedule if they're both lining up in the top ten.
I'm about to pull it up.
Mississippi State again at seven. They must have a tough schedule. Vanderbilt at eight, USC at nine, and then Wisconsin at 10. So theirs adds a little bit of Big Ten flavor in Georgia Tech as well to that top 10. So, but it says it right there, plain as day. Florida's number one in both of these. I mean, you can't ask for a worse schedule than what the Gators got, except for the fact that maybe trading Miami for Utah is going to be a little bit beneficial to Florida.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to remember, too, that the Football Power Index, it is a numbers-based system, right?
Right.
Everything that it pumps out and chugs out is all based off the numbers. And so it doesn't surprise me that the SEC dominates in their top 10 toughest schedules in college football, because the SEC's numbers are ridiculous. They're weighted because the SEC is just that much better than every other conference in college football. And so, according to the FPI, nine of the top 10 toughest schedules in college football are from the SEC. Two of those are being the newcomers, Oklahoma and Texas. Here's what Georgia Tech's schedule is. You ready for this? Because you mentioned how they are in both. They start the year in Dublin, Ireland in week zero, taking on Florida State. So that's tough. You got to fly out to Ireland in week zero and play Florida State. They'll play Georgia State. They'll go to Syracuse. They'll play VMI. They'll go at Louisville, home for Duke, at North Carolina, home for Notre Dame, at Virginia Tech, home for Miami, home for NC State, and then on the road at Georgia.
You know, that Georgia State team is not bad. They may give Georgia Tech a little run for their money up there in Atlanta.
I just don't see. I mean,
That doesn't just sound terrible.
No, I mean, you don't hear that and go, "Oh my gosh, like that's unbelievable." Like doesn't come off that way. But for a Georgia Tech team that is fighting to be any sort of relevant in an ACC conference that's fighting for its relevance as well, I mean, Louisville hasn't been anything. You go at North Carolina, that'll be tough. You'd play Notre Dame, but you get them at home. You play Miami, but you get them at home. You're at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, which is always a tough place to play, but Virginia Tech hasn't been anything.
Right.
And then, yeah, you got to go to Athens, which I'm sure that weighs a lot into the numbers side of it. But I don't know. I don't think that's just the most difficult schedule the ACC has to offer.
Week zero in Dublin, Ireland, Georgia Tech and Florida State. I take it game day will be there?
I think so. It's going to be on ESPN television.
How many Florida State fans are going to try and take their tomahawks across the pond and see if they can't get a little piece of Kirk Herbstreit on at game day for that one? That'll be must-watch television.
Well, I don't remember who said it. It may have been you or it may have been somebody else. I can't remember, but they've been doing that for a couple of years now. Why is that not always just Notre Dame sharpied into that game? Like,
right.
There is no other team in the world that can draw a crowd bigger than Notre Dame in college football playing in week zero in Dublin, Ireland. Like, no offense. Nobody from Atlanta is going to make this trip to go to Dublin, Ireland to watch Georgia Tech play football.
There will be a few folks.
And there will be a handful of folks that are Florida State fans from Tallahassee that will make the trip. But nobody's going to travel like Notre Dame would to this type of game. And
well, Chief Osceola and the horse and the flaming spear get to go, and they're just going to throw. What do you think all those Irish people are going to think when Chief Osceola rolls out and throws down that spear at midfield, man?
Can horses fly, or do they have to, like, how does that work?
They may have to boat them over there.
I think you probably would. You'd have to put them on some kind of a boat about 2 weeks
before.
Surely
they can find some type of horse over there and
just borrow
in Ireland
one.
And borrow one.
I mean, you'd have to train it to do what you wanted it to do. I don't know, man.
That's crazy. I'm looking at Oklahoma's schedule, and in these lists that you mentioned and the one I mentioned at 247, you notice another thing that Texas is nowhere near these top 10s in most difficult schedules.
I mean, I think the FPI had them at 10.
They had Texas at 10.
They do,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, sorry. Yeah. I'm wrong about that. And in the 247,
but I know where you're going with this.
But, I mean, Oklahoma's schedule, I'm going to have to stop talking about it because I can just talk about it all summer long. It's brutal.
It's miserable.
It is tough. And then they threw in South Carolina. I mean, it's one of their easier games. But, you know, isn't that where the head coach at South Carolina used to coach at Oklahoma? Didn't they hire him away from Oklahoma as an assistant, Shane Beamer?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a painful schedule. Temple, Houston, Tulane, Tennessee, Auburn, Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss. They do get the Maine Black Bears and then finish the season with at Missouri, hosting Alabama at LSU. They're
going
to be lucky to go 7-5 their first year.
I don't know what Oklahoma did to upset the SEC, but they did something. And here's the good thing, though. That schedule will be flipped next year. It'll be the same thing. You just play the opposite locations, but you're still playing some of the best opponents the SEC has to offer. And so I don't know what Oklahoma did. Side note, College Game Day will be in Dublin, Ireland for week zero for Georgia Tech and Florida State. So that'll be – I'm pretty sure they were there last year.
You know, ESPN, they came out there with their polls, and they had Oklahoma ranked 8th. And Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback who works at ESPN, has been quoted as saying that to have them at number 8 to me feels a bit aggressive. You know, just a bit aggressive. Now, where would I have Oklahoma? Probably around 15, which is a great spot, I might add. Let me tell you what, with that schedule in your first year of the SEC, if they finish 15th, just outside of a possible berth in the college football playoffs, Brent Venables has done one heck of a good job.
I'm with you on that.
I mean, if I were to have to, you know, listen, I know fans get fired up this time of year, and I'm one of them, and everybody, even including the few Vandy fans out there, are going to say, we're going to be a top 25 team, right? Nobody wants to say, whoo, boy, we got a long ways to go. All right, not this time of year. Now, and so everyone thinks that their team is going to be knocking on the playoff door or in the college football playoff or at least in the conversation and in the top 25 because that's what fans do this time of year. You get your hopes up.
Yeah.
Right? But not everybody can finish 9-3 and in the top 25 or 8-4. In fact, most teams don't when you look back at the season.
Right. Not in this conference.
I would be willing to bet right now that Oklahoma will not finish in the top 20.
By the end of
the end of this year.
I'll take that. Does anybody not take that? I think.
Heck, Greg McElroy thinks they're a top 15 team.
I don't
either. I mean, do you look at what they've got on paper they have to play, and look at everybody around them in the conference. There's 16 teams now. Mm-hmm. How many teams could you definitively say right now Oklahoma is better than out of those 16? I mean, lead pipe lock better than?
Six or seven?
Maybe.
Maybe.
So that right there, you're saying they're at least the 10th best team in the SEC. Does that equate, if you're the 10th best team in the SEC, for sure, that you're going to be in the top 25? I don't see it. It's a numbers game at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this schedule.
I put Oklahoma middle third of the conference. I break it down in almost thirds, and I put them middle third, probably, yeah, just I put them middle of the pack now.
If Oklahoma, let me see, I don't think they're on the schedule. But here's a hypothetical. Here's a what-if for you, my friend. I know you love the what-if game.
Of course.
But if Oklahoma were to, say, have to go to Kentucky in late October on an ESPN Saturday night, would you say, oh, that's a W?
Sitting here right now?
Right here, right now. W.
Not a definitive one.
No.
No.
No way you would. Mm. Or South Carolina, for that matter. And South Carolina, to me, is one of the weaker teams in the league right now.
Sure.
But this is the SEC, man.
They're going to find out.
They're about to find out.
There's no more easy games playing Kansas.
They dominated, and Kansas is a good program now, but you're exactly right. They dominated teams like Kansas and Baylor and who's had some decent seasons, and TCU. These are teams that Oklahoma dominated forever, and it wasn't just because Oklahoma was so good. They were just that much better than them because the competition was weaker.
Yeah, their talent compared to those other programs was ridiculous. I mean, that's a team that was competing for national championships.
A&M, LSU, Texas, Alabama, even Florida, Georgia, now Auburn, Missouri. I mean, there's 8, 9, 10 teams that have just as much talent as Oklahoma right now. Ole Miss?
If not more. And that's a struggle, man. That's a big time struggle.
They're not going to finish in the top 25.
I think it's a safe bet. You'd probably find that on a site for fun somewhere. I'm sure you could find that.
For entertainment purposes only.
Of course. And, you know, I should probably break up when talking about teams in the SEC. We should probably break it up in fourths just because that's the easy math, right? Top four, second four, third four, bottom four.
For me, I do it like this. I mean, I think it has to vary from year to year. I think there's three teams right now above everybody else in the league definitively. Georgia, Texas, and Alabama. And not just on talent across the roster, but, you know, what they've done lately as teams, you know, championships, but most importantly, what they bring back at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're far and above everybody else. And then I think there's everybody else, and you can debate who should be on top there. That's probably Ole Miss in Missouri, followed by LSU right there. And A&M, Auburn's kind of in there. And then there's the bottom three, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Vandy. That's the way I look at it, because in any season in that middle of that pack, just like Missouri did last year, one of those teams can rise up.
And that's how it's supposed to go. You're going to have a team that surprises everybody, and you're going to have a team that disappoints everybody. And that's just how seasons go, and that's the fun of it. That's fun of trying to predict who that's going to be and trying to figure out what that's going to look like over the course of a season. Let's get to our final break here in hour number one. Just got a text. The college football playoff has released some of its or all of its game times and game the bowl game assignments for the playoff games and all that good stuff. So we'll talk about that. Carry us into hour number two. Got a lot more to get to here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Also, text us 334-784-1067. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Got a couple of minutes here in hour number one. We'll continue this conversation into hour number two. You can be a part of it on the phone lines, 334-321-1390, or our text box, which has been blowing up, by the way.
Blowing up. We're getting some very weird texts from folks out there. So, listen, if you want your text read on air, you have to give us a name and where you're texting from.
Yeah, we at least want to know.
We need to know where you people are. especially some of you that are texting some of the weird stuff that's coming to us, so we don't ever have to go to that city.
Well, we at least want to know who you are. I mean, so that way we could show a little love. And this is from a very loyal listener, Jeff, down in Enterprise. He's the one that sent me the link about an hour ago. The College Football Playoff has announced dates, kick times, and broadcast times.
Here we go.
For the 2024-2025 playoff, the first year of course, the expanded 12-team playoff. So, in the first round, the playoff first round games, remember, these will be on college campuses, Uncle T-Bone. These are going to be in big-time college stadiums. No more, well, I mean, you'll get to neutral sites eventually, but these first few games, you're going to get to see some really unique environments. It's going to be Friday, December 20th, and Saturday, December 21st. One game on that Friday night, December 20th, 8 o'clock Eastern time, ABC ESPN, for the first round. And then three games on Saturday. And we'll do this in Central Time. That's where we are. So Friday will be 7 o'clock Central Time. And then a triple header first round playoff on Saturday. 11 a.m., 3 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. So just back to back to back college football playoff games on that weekend before Christmas. What day does that put Christmas on? That'd be, what, Thursday or Wednesday? I think it's Thursday. Is my math right? Christmas will be on a Thursday this year for on December 25th, because Saturday being December 21st. So just that weekend before
Christmas will be on a Wednesday this year.
It's on a Wednesday. Okay. So the weekend before Christmas is when the first round of the playoffs will happen. And then you will have the playoff quarterfinals. This is where you get the bowl game. You get the bowl game assignment. So it's the, well, I guess we'll have that coming up in hour number two. You have four playoff quarterfinal games, big name bowls.
Before we go to break, though, I've noticed something in the first playoff round. Look at this. First game on Friday on ESPN. Saturday, the first two games until the night game are on TNT.
How about that? TNT, they made that announcement, what, about a week ago?
I kind of like that.
Where TNT was able to get a couple of the rights for a couple of games. So we'll see how that goes, because if you've been paying attention, TNT and their NBA deal coming to an end and trying to get all that stuff figured out. So they're trying to figure out what they're going to be broadcasting with Turner Sports. So a lot more conversation about that. That'll get us in to hour number two. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goetz, and we appreciate you being with us here on ESPN. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. That's our station website on our brand new Radio Alabama app paired up with our sister company, our parent company up in Sylacauga. You can find that on Radio Alabama. You can find that on any of your app stores, Google Play, whatever that you have. And then you can also just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We talked some Auburn football recruiting in hour number one, talked some scheduling in hour number one as well. And as we were getting out of the first hour into the second hour, we have some playoff updates for college football. We've got dates, we've got times, we've got bowl assignments, so we're getting into that here in the second hour. But we do want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day for On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them being a sponsor of the second hour each and every day here during On the Line. Phone line is open 334-321-1390. You can also get in on the very hot On the Line text box 334-784-1067. And we were getting into this, Uncle T-Bone, at the end of the first hour. Our friend Jeff down in Enterprise sent us this, the fact that we now have dates and times and locations. I guess you're not all locations, but you have the bowl assignments for the college football playoff. And a 12-game playoff, right, you'll have the first four games in the first round. You'll have four games in the quarterfinals. You'll have two in the semis, and you'll have the national championship game, the 12-team playoff for college football. The first four games in the first round, one of them will be played on Friday, December 20th at 7 o'clock Central Time on ABC or ESPN. The other three will be a triple header on the Saturday after that, Saturday, December 21st. 11 a.m., 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and 7 o'clock that night. And something you pointed out to end the first hour was those first two games on that Saturday, two of the first four games in the playoff will be on TNT, not on ESPN networks.
Will that mean that we get more Charles Barkley in our life? Because I hope so. That'd be awesome having him. And
I don't know if they'd stick him in the football booth.
I'm sure he watches plenty of football.
Oh, I know he does. There's no doubt.
So I know what I'll be doing Saturday, December 21st.
Sitting and listening and watching and just...
I mean, that's just a football palooza right there. I mean, that's just going to be amazing.
Yeah. Now, there are some people... Our friend Christian texts in and says that he's not happy about an 11 a.m. start for a playoff game on that Saturday. I kind of get that. I mean, it would be hard to get up for an 11 a.m. playoff game. Like, that's
just don't go to sleep.
Sure. I mean, is that what you did playing in your NFL league, right? The neighborhood football?
No, that was a little pre late night back then. But yeah, I mean, let me tell you what, if Auburn is hosting the 11 o'clock game on December 21st in the inaugural 12-team playoff as an 8 seed or something, this town will be on fire. There will be no problem with people getting up and getting right for Jordan Hare for that game.
As most college towns, you would expect that to be the case.
That's right.
So, I mean... Yeah, I mean, there's look, if you're in a playoff game and it's 11 a.m., I say just be thankful that you're in the playoffs, right? Just be thankful you're there. Of course, you'd rather have that mid-afternoon or even that night game for a playoff, but think about how electric that's going to be. Oh, my gosh. Think about how electric that's going to be in some of these big-time college football stadiums where it's going to be a 7, 8 o'clock kickoff. Think about a whiteout in Happy Valley and Penn State if they get to host a first-round playoff game. Are you kidding me? That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Moving on into the quarterfinals, New Year's Eve, they'll do the same thing around the 20th and 21st on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. There will be one game that night, 6:30 Central on ESPN. At this point, it becomes neutral site games. This is your VRBO Fiesta Bowl. Then the next day on New Year's Day, 12 o'clock, high noon in Atlanta, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, 4 o'clock, that standard and historic time that they've always had at Central Time. Actually, that's a little bit later, I think, for the Rose Bowl than normal. I seem to remember that always being about 3 o'clock Central, but could be wrong on that. That'll be your Rose Bowl brought to you by Prudential. And then the Sugar Bowl, New Year's Day night, as always, 7:45 down in New Orleans, the All-State Sugar Bowl. How awesome will that game be?
Yeah, that's going to be fantastic. I like those bowl assignments, and those will rotate, right? Those will kind of, as they always have, those will just kind of move through and everything. And look, you've had some historic Rose Bowl games in the past. You've had one of the most historic Rose Bowl games early on in the, I guess, middle of the years of the college football playoff between when Georgia was there and went to a couple of overtimes and eventually go on to the national championship. I mean, that was one of the most historic Rose Bowls that we've had in recent history.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, when they were playing Oklahoma. And that was a phenomenal Rose Bowl game. And so, yeah, you've got the Fiesta Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, and the All-State Sugar Bowl for the quarterfinals. Then you move into the playoff semifinals. This will be a week from then. a little over a week from then.
Yeah, more than that.
What do you mean?
It'll be 8 days.
Yeah, especially for that person that plays on Tuesday.
Yeah, it could be 9 days for the two. That's what I noticed also between the first round of the playoff and the playoff quarterfinals. Say you played on Friday the 20th and you didn't pop off again until Wednesday, January 1st.
That's a lot of time.
That's 12 days off.
That's a weird length. I know you're dealing with holidays and things like that.
This is the one thing I don't like about the expanded playoff. Is this thing's going to go deeper and deeper into January as it gets larger and larger.
Which is why college coaches want all these different dates, signing days and early signing periods and recruiting periods and all that mess. They want all of that to be changed and it just to be more fluent, because as it stands right now, you would have playoff teams that are going to be playing during National Signing Day and during the signing period. And then you've got the portal and you've got all that stuff opening up. Like, that's where all those dates start really getting weird.
The official National Signing Day is obviously that first Wednesday in February of every year. But the real signing day is somewhere in December now.
It's been early signing day that's become the 90% signing day. And so that's all happening during the playoff.
Right.
And so if you almost are getting punished, and now more teams are going to be punished because more teams are making the playoff. And that's just not right. And that's what these coaches have been stressing for so long. It's like, man, the calendar is so out of whack. Something has to change. And so you're right. The dates in between the first round and the quarterfinals, I mean, yeah, you're looking at 10 or 11 days from when teams are going to be playing. And then from the quarterfinals on December 31st on New Year's Eve and then on New Year's Day, from that to the semis, yeah, you're looking at another 8 or 9 days.
Those games will start on Thursday, January 9th, the semifinals, 6:30. That's the Orange Bowl down in Miami, brought to you by Capital One. And then followed up that Friday in the old Cotton Bowl, that's in Jerry World, brought to you by Goodyear at 6:30. So there's your two semifinal games. And then last but not least, you got another 10-day wait.
Gosh.
From that Friday, January 10th game to Monday, January 20th. Still to this day, I do not understand, other than it being about TV money, why in the world do they play the college football national championship in football on a Monday?
At least right
that's,
now.
That's just ridiculous.
I forgot it's in Atlanta. That's going
to
be
exciting. Bringing it back to Atlanta. I guess these six bowl games, these six major bowls, they'll rotate, obviously, every year. And then, you know, maybe perhaps next year, you know, New Orleans will have the national championship, which would have been the old Sugar Bowl and you know, all the way around, like with all six games going from Miami to Dallas to Atlanta to New Orleans to the Rose Bowl to Phoenix, Arizona. I'd like to see some other cities get some looks at the national championship game. I hope it just doesn't stay within those parameters.
Well, this game will be kicking off at 6:30 Central Time, so, I mean, at least it will be over by, you know, 11 o'clock, which I know that's still late for a lot of people, but, I mean, I can remember
it's
a ton of –
It's a school night.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, what are we doing in college football? Just put it on that Saturday. What would that be, the 18th?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they think that there's just not enough time to travel and do whatever and get ready for the game. But at this point, any of these teams left are ready to play football.
I mean, it's been this way for years. You know what I mean? It's
just
been this
it
way
on
forever.
That Saturday the 18th, and so people can and don't make it such a late night game.
Yeah, I'm with you. Here's what I noticed before we get to the phone lines, and we got some text we need to get to as well. It's going to be a month, 1 month. From the first playoff game until the national champion is crowned.
A whole nother month of football, making the season go from August to late January if you're the lucky one that finishes on top.
That's wild. That really is wild to me.
That's a long time.
That is a
That's
long
half
time.
A year almost.
A month?
No, the whole season.
Oh. I was like, whoa, hold on now.
No, and if they were to expand the schedule, right,
mm-hmm.
and start playing earlier in August, I mean, it is almost half a year.
If there's something that I don't want, do not start games in mid-August.
Absolutely
high school
not.
Does that, and of course, being a high school broadcaster, I'm a part of that.
It's brutal.
It's miserable down here.
Right.
Brutal. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, it's Andy Wargle.
What's going on, Andy? Good to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, I had to break it up and call and let you know I don't use you when the news is juicy. so, what... Two things. What is Why is Mizzou so good? What do they have going for them? And I'll listen to that. But first part, one thing I know about Auburn is when we're expected to do good, we don't. And when we're not, we do great. So keep on talking how you're talking, because I think we could be in for a really good year with Coach Freeze calling it. Our quarterback was good when he had good receivers, and he was like any other Auburn quarterback with the team we had, just subpar. So
yeah,
I think we could be on for, but I don't want to say, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to be the reason why we're, but,
well, if Auburn has a bad year, I'm going to go ahead and come back to this date on June 5th and blame you, Andy. So just be ready.
I'll take it. I was raised to eat the medicine. But yeah, tell me a little bit about Mizzou. Why are we worried about them? And,
sure.
And I think the spread is they're going to beat us by 12 already or something. But
it was 10.
I don't know if they have a quarterback or receiver coming back, but it's crazy they can get talent up there in that cold, gray, state of theirs. So,
there you go.
Yep, up there in the misery.
Yeah. I played college football up there in 2 years. All right, I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks. Well, hey, hold on, Andy, before you go. Yeah. Were you here the other day when I made the...
No, no.
The big announcement. I made a big announcement. You're going to be really proud of me.
You watch both?
I only watched one, but I watched the one I was supposed to watch first.
Which one was that?
I watched Old School.
Okay. And I mean, what did you think?
It was fantastic. It was very, very good. I laughed for 90 minutes. It was phenomenal.
I want to hear a couple one-liners throughout this summer.
Ooh.
Throw them in there.
Hey, you're my boy, Blue.
You're my boy, Blue.
Appreciate the call, Andy. Always great to hear from you, my man. There's only about three lines from that movie that you could say on the radio that are actually clean.
A lot of those are not safe for work. But getting back to the misery known as Mizzou and why they're so good, I think it starts, first of all, at quarterback with senior Brady Cook.
Oh, there's
back.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
He's got a very live arm, is extremely athletic. Eli Drinkwitz is one of these young head coaches who has been running some type of spread offense probably practically his entire life. He's a very gifted play caller, was a heck of a good coach at Appalachian State, has really upgraded that roster, Andy. They got Luther Bearden III, who is one of the top playmakers out on the wide receiver, wherever you line him up, in college football. Some people trying to say he might be a dark horse Heisman candidate heading into 2024. They're doing what Auburn's doing. They're starting to recruit bigger time, high profile people out of high school. And Bearden is a perfect example who chose Missouri over Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if he were at Ohio State, he might be a Heisman candidate right now. Okay. Here's another example. This past recruiting cycle, they had a big time number three quarterback in the country, Matt Zoller's pick from Germantown, Tennessee, pick Missouri over Georgia. So they're winning these recruiting battles.
Believe it or not.
They're upgrading their roster, and they've done a heck of a good job filling in gaps on their roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball with this transfer portal. Heck, they beat Auburn out for a transfer guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Eli Drinkwitz is a good coach. Missouri's one of those programs that I have to see do it more than just one season, be more than a flash in the pan. Let's see if you can pop off about 3 to 4 seasons like you had last year in a row before I'm going to say you're a true contender year in, year out in the SEC. But I can say this, Andy, I watch a lot of football, and you do too. You did not want to play Missouri at the end of last season.
No.
They were a dangerous team, and had there been a 12-team playoff last year and they matched up with somebody higher up in the first round, I could have called upset alert.
Missouri, nobody wanted a piece of Missouri because they were just a hot team. They were a dangerous, gritty, offensive team. They had enough defense, which they do lose a lot of this year. Missouri will lose a lot of that defense this year.
But they've gone to the portal.
Sure. Yeah, they've gone to the portal, and they've brought back enough of their offensive production to where Missouri brings back almost 80% of their offensive production from a year ago. 80%! That is top 20 in the country on offense.
And I got another caveat on why they could have a successful season. Andy, take a look when you get a chance at their schedule. It's one of the easier schedules in the SEC this year.
Sure, absolutely.
It is extremely manageable. So, you know, that might not equate to them being a little bit more battle-tested by the end of the season if they're trying to get into the college football playoffs, but that gives them a better advantage of getting there.
Well, they bring back Brady Cook. You already mentioned that. They do lose a running back in Cody Schrader, who was 1,600 yards, but Marcus Carroll's going to step in, who rushed for 1,300 yards last year. So I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, Eli Drinkwitz, he's one of these young coaches you're going to keep an eye on. He can, like I said, if he can pop off a couple more years like he's had last year, there's going to be some bigger-time programs trying to take him away from the Missouri Tigers.
Their receiving core, all back. Tight ends, all back. All coming from a guy, from a group that just exploded last year, that really became a strength for them, and a group that has only gotten better, and you bring them back. I mean, the offense is going to be elite. Now, again, they're going to have to replace most of the guys on their defense, but Missouri is going to be able to score some points, ladies and gentlemen. I can promise you that. And so, Andy, it's a good question because a lot of people are talking about Missouri, and we'll do a deeper dive on them throughout the summer as we do all of our rankings and quarterback rankings and team rankings, all that good stuff. But that's a good question, Andy. Always good to hear from you, my friend. The phones are open, 334-321-1390. You can also text us, 334-784-1067. Plenty of text to get to when we come back here on ESPN 106.7. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Couple of texts that we have gotten over the past couple of minutes. First one, want to highlight, former intern Alan is listening and screamed at me, "You're my boy, Blue." So he's listening, and of course, Alan has seen, he's better than me. He saw old school before I did. So shout out to intern Alan. We appreciate him listening as he's off doing his big thing. A couple of texts that we got, this one from, two of them actually from John in Auburn, very loyal listener here on the Plains. He said, "So what if one of these first round games is somebody like Ole Miss versus Michigan? I feel like with this new format, more fans will be rooting for their conference. Would you be rooting? Does this, with the new format and the expanded playoff, does this give any SEC fans more pride in the SEC, or are you still going to cheer for or cheer against the teams that you hate?" That's an interesting point that John brings up.
We've had this discussion before at nauseam, Jacob. I'm not cheering for hardly any SEC team, strictly because how we were treated by them in 2010 with Cam Newton. And every single SEC school that I know of lined up, slung mud at Auburn for years. They even had to, the coaches wouldn't even vote him as the SEC football player of the year. Instead, I think they chose some swimmer from male athlete of the year from Tennessee. No SEC. The SEC does Auburn no favors, never has, never will. And absolutely not, John. I pull for Auburn, and occasionally we'll cheer for a team like South Carolina and the SEC that's at a disadvantage like we are most of the time. Fact.
He also brings up the point that if you look at some of these playoffs, right, they're not going to do that first round on, because the first round game is a Friday night and then three games on Saturday. They're not going to put any on Sunday because they're not going to compete with the NFL. I mean, the fact that the NFL has owned a day of the week for basically its entire existence, which that brings up an interesting thing too, completely off the rail here. Have you noticed how the NFL has had its day around the holidays? The NBA has had its day around the holidays, right? You had the NBA on Christmas Day. You've had NFL on Thanksgiving. And those two major leagues just kind of had a mutual agreement of, hey, we won't touch you if you don't touch us. Well, that has gone out the window. I mean, you've got games.
Oh, yeah.
You've got both leagues playing games on the same day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. It don't matter. Everybody's playing every day, Uncle T-Bone. They've just given up on that. They have said, to heck with that. We'll go up. We'll put our best product against your best product and see which one's going to win out. And I can already tell you which one's going to win out.
Yeah, that's the NFL. Jacob, we got some breaking news, and it's some good news. Just came out on AL.com a few minutes ago while we've been on air. Brian Battee, off ventilator, has movement in limbs after shooting, according to a GoFundMe page. The article's from Matt Cohan over at AL.com. Yep. And it says Auburn running back Brian Battee was taken off a ventilator Wednesday and has shown movement in his extremities. And this has been a terrible story. It says here that Brian was able to give a thumbs up to his mom, with his left hand and showed movement in his right leg. His family released a statement not long ago. The right side of his body had not shown any sign of movement until 2 days ago. By grace of God, Brian was able to move his right knee and leg. This news comes as a miracle, but Brian is a fighter and always has been. So our prayers and thoughts continue to be with Auburn running back Brian Battee, recovering from a devastating gunshot wound down in Florida when he was back home visiting. And, you know, there hasn't been a ton of information about his medical status that's been available in media. And this is obviously not one of those type things where you go around asking, you know, any type of folks that you may know stuff, like what's going on with him. It's been very evident, Jacob, from day one that he was fighting for his life. Mm-hmm. And this is a great sign that he's moving in the right direction. It's glad to hear it.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And, you know, the little bit of information that they had released about him was that, I mean, it wasn't good. I mean, they were really afraid that he was going to be in a bad state of physical and mental capacity when he got out, or
Understood.
If he did get out, right?
Understood.
I mean, that was the initial kind of response to all of this. And, I mean, there's a long way to go. There's no doubt
no
from
question.
This, but, that's a miracle from God. There's no doubt about it. Another piece of information that Matt, who does a fantastic job over at AL.com, he tweeted out earlier today at 9:30 this morning. He says, deputies in Sarasota have arrested the girlfriend of the man alleged to have shot Brian and Tommy Battee. Tommy, of course, being his brother that was shot and killed. Brian's still fighting for his life, but deputies in Sarasota have arrested the girlfriend of the man alleged to have shot Brian and Tommy Battee. According to an arrest report, deputies believe she discarded a gun in the Manatee River after the shooting.
Yeah, apparently she tossed the weapon, I guess under orders from her old man who'd done the shooting, into the river there locally. And in today's world, folks, she forgot that there's just about a video camera everywhere. And they busted her. And they got it on video, and I think they've recovered that gun as well. So, you know, look, this case is obviously going to litigate for quite some time. Hopefully justice will be brought for the Battee family. Brian's older brother, Tommy, was murdered and died on the scene, and Brian's been fighting for his life ever since. This isn't even a football conversation. Unfortunately, you know, Auburn and the world will have to keep going on, and the world keeps spinning. But I'm just thankful to hear that you know, there's movement. There's obviously he's understanding words and able to communicate a little bit more, according to these reports. And you said he's got a long road, but the Auburn family will be there for him.
Yeah, in today's world, not only are there cameras everywhere, you carry a physical tracker in your
Absolutely.
Pocket 24/7. I mean, you're they don't even call them smartphones anymore, because it's not even a phone.
It's a computer.
It's a legitimate computer that mm-hmm. is just unbelievably tracking you at every scene. And if you don't think it is, well, I got news for you, right? They say you got lakefront property or oceanfront property down in Lochapoca that you can sell. This thing tracks
from
everything.
Highway 14, you can see the sea.
Yeah, this thing keeps up with everything you do. And so there's been more arrests there of the man who allegedly shot them. His girlfriend was taken into custody after what they have claimed allegedly tossed the gun that was used in the incident in the Manatee River. So we'll give you more updates there, but appreciate you bringing that up, Uncle T-Bone. Thanks to Matt Cohen for that update from AL.com. We got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Give us a text as well, 334-784-1067. 30 more minutes coming up after this.
With Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Jacob Goins. Alongside me is Uncle T-Bone. Again, you can give us a call 334-321-1390 or give us a text at 334-784-1067. And while Auburn football coming out of a big weekend of recruiting, Uncle T-Bone, this weekend is going to be a big one as well. And that's going to be the case for the next handful of weeks, pretty much leading up to Big Cat Weekend at the end of July. And the highlight for this coming weekend are two guys who will be on campus who are not only not committed to Auburn, they're committed to Alabama, and they're going to be on campus this weekend, highlighted by the defensive lineman Antonio Coleman, which that name may sound familiar to some people down from Sarah Land, Alabama, but he will be making his official visit this weekend here on the Plains, a guy that was committed to Auburn and then flipped to Alabama back in late December.
Well, I mean, he was committed to Alabama, then flipped to Auburn, and then flip back to Alabama, and Auburn's trying to make it the quadruple flipper this weekend. The 6'2", 265-pound defensive tackle out of Sarah Land, one of the top defensive linemen in the country. He's bigger than 265. This kid's a beast. And, you know, I know he's committed to Alabama, and but he's taken just about as many, if not more, visits to Auburn over the last year and a half than to any other school. I mean, you look over on the rival side, he was here in October. He was here in November of 2023. Heck, even after decommitting to Auburn and committing back to Alabama for his third commitment in this recruiting cycle, he's been here in January, he's been here in March, and he's going to be here in June.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to ask, if Nick Saban was still at Alabama, would he be visiting Auburn this much as a Alabama commitment?
I mean, probably not. Probably not. And I don't think it was from a, oh, you're not allowed. But most of the time when commits or when recruits committed to Alabama, this is what we were talking about the other day when
right.
we want Auburn to get to. When you committed to Alabama, you wanted to stay committed to Alabama. It wasn't a Clemson scenario of Dabo where, oh, you're committed here, you better not even think about taking another visit. No, it was just Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide had so many good things to offer that if you committed there, you were good. You were set. Ready to go.
Unless you were just one of the top players in the country and you committed to Alabama under Nick Saban, then you started kind of dilly-dallying around at taking a look at some other schools, you could be replaced.
Sure. And back then, too, if you committed to Alabama, there was pretty much no one better. You weren't going to find a better situation 9 times out of 10. So I think that was had a lot to do with it. But you look at a guy like Antonio Coleman, who is a massive, massive player, one of the best defensive linemen in the country and in the state. Auburn could and very well might be a better situation for him. I mean, that's an argument that is being had right now across the state of Alabama for a top player at any position, and you could break it down by position if you wanted to, but what's the better spot to be? Is it better for a guy like him to go to Alabama and gamble and take a risk and see if it continues to have the success it's had? Or do you come to Auburn where something is being built that's proven to be built, but is still somewhat of a gamble? I think that's what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I think just about everybody outside of going to play for Kirby Smart right now is you're in some type of gamble mode when you choose the school you're going to. You know, obviously, I'm sure NIL money will have something to do with it and say so. Don't get mad. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on. It's just the world we live in. All things considered, if the money were practically the same, you know, would he have a little bit better opportunity perhaps to play at Auburn earlier? My question would be, would you rather play for Kane Womack as your defensive coordinator, or would you rather play for DJ Durkin? You know, would you rather be on that staff that has Charles Kelly? Who else is on Alabama staff defensively that really stands out? Is Freddie Roach still there?
I mean, I think Auburn's just got – I mean, they've got the guys that you would want, and so many people,
right.
So many recruits, the current players have just raved about DJ Durkin.
I'm telling you, you need to keep an eye on DJ Durkin, folks, for the future. at Auburn. I'm not saying anything, but one day there will be an opening, and I'm not going to say anything else. That guy is going to come back and be a very good head coach somewhere for somebody. The other Alabama commit who will be on campus allegedly this weekend is Derek Smith. That's the 6'1", 180 athlete, wide receiver, whatever you want to call him, out of Selma, Alabama. He has committed to Alabama over Auburn. A lot of people expected him to commit to Auburn. It was kind of a shocker that he went to Alabama at the time. This is a part, and you know, like Antonio Coleman Jr., looking over his profile, there's no other school that he's visited more than Auburn over the last year. Going back to last July, going back to September, going back to last November, and has been back on campus this January, according to Rivals. You know, he's visited Florida State. He obviously, he's visited Alabama. He committed there. I love this, and I'm going to tell you why. In the past, I feel like when Auburn and other regimes were on a player like the caliber of Caleb Cunningham, they didn't continue to recruit the same position as hard. Not saying that they knew they were going to get this guy, and he was, but it was almost like, this is our guy. Our pitches, we're telling you that you're our guy. You know, Caleb, you're our guy. Mr. Cunningham, you're the man. We're all on you first. And Auburn's like, you know, we're going to keep recruiting everybody. And that's what you got to do. Even this is a four-star player in the state of Alabama. And I know Auburn's hardcore all over Caleb Cunningham, that wide receiver. We talked about it in the first hour, who may be the best wide receiver in the country right now out of high school over there in Mississippi. But Auburn's like, oh, we're gonna keep recruiting other players too.
Which is how it should be, right?
Absolutely.
It's not Auburn.
Even if they're committed to other schools.
Sure. Even if they're committed to Auburn.
Even more. Well, good point.
I mean, even if you're committed to Auburn.
No better words I've heard about recruiting in a long time other than you just said. Even if they're committed to you, you better be recruiting them even harder.
Better recruit them even harder and still recruit their position, because you just never know.
Good point.
That has been the narrative. That's been the slogan, right? You just never know what's going to happen in this recruiting game now. And just because you're recruiting a Cunningham doesn't mean you can't go after a Derek Nix or anybody like that. And I feel like Auburn and other teams, too, have fallen into that trap at times where, I think you may have said this on Monday or even on Friday, where it's like, all these coaches have the list of the guys they want to go after, and so many teams have fallen into that trap of, we're only going after these guys. This is our primary list. We're going to get our guys. We're going to be the best team in the country. This will be the best class we've had in 20 years. But they don't consider the what if of, what if we don't get them? What if we don't land them? What happens if we don't get the guys that we wanted? And Auburn seems to be in a spot right now where they're just going out in the machine gun type of way, and they're just trying to hit anything they possibly can and try to grab and get any player that they possibly can and just try and get in front of them and talk to them. And most importantly, they're trying to get them on campus. They're trying to bring as many possible players. Guys, I mean, look at the list right now of guys that have been making official visits over the last couple of days, last couple of weeks. I mean, you've got Auburn commits, Alabama commits, Georgia commits, USC commits. I mean, guys that have decided, Ohio State, Miami, like guys that have already decided they're going to play other places, and Auburn doesn't care. Auburn doesn't care. They're still going after them, and they're still going to do everything they can to get them here, because what we've been hearing from the guys that were on campus this past weekend went as good as it could possibly go. The facilities are fantastic. That was the best visit I've ever had. That's in line with everything you hear from 90% of recruits that step on this campus, that come to the Plains. They love it here. They love the staff. They love the facilities. They love the atmosphere. Getting them on, it's the recruiting pitch as old as time here at Auburn. Get them here. Get them on campus, and it's really hard to turn it down. And that's the good thing about this staff right now.
Yeah, I don't care what happens with Antonio Coleman this weekend. You know, if he decommits from Alabama, or there's great news that he had a wonderful time at Auburn, but he's still committed, or even if he were to say, you know what, that's it, bam, coming back to Auburn, that recruiting battle will go down till National Signing Day and probably beyond.
And most of these are going to. And two, I just got a text from Mike in Auburn. It says, it's a bidding game, which on which team is paying more, which is why you cannot.
For some players, I would agree with that. I don't think it's for all players like that, though. I mean, just as long as you're close.
That's fair.
And you know, I don't think that. I think that a lot of these players are kind of getting a bad rap from the purists out there who are just disgusted by the money that's paid out to these players now, and they just can't believe that some kid might get $1 million to play football at Auburn or Alabama, and they kind of just throw the baby out with the bathwater and say everybody's just in it for the money and it's all a bidding game. I think with some players it's a bidding game, but I also think that there's still – kids that are fans that have always wanted to play somewhere, or they get really close with an assistant coach who they trust and love and their family does, or it's just a proximity issue. Like, you know, Cam Coleman was a Texas A&M commit. Going to be a very difficult trip for his family from Phoenix City week in, week out to go see him play in College Station when Auburn's just down the road.
Which I think that part of it, and something you said just a second ago, the player and assistant coach relationships.
Huge.
You could make an argument that it's more important than ever before, because that really could win you a recruiting battle with whether it be, you know, a linebacker in the linebacker's coach, or whether it be a quarterback and his offensive coordinator, or whatever the case may be. I mean, you could make an argument that that is more important than it's ever been, because sure, let's say you have program X and program Y that are offering the similar amount of money within $50,000. They have the same level of facilities. They have the same amount of winning. They have the same amount of everything. But that one assistant coach has a better relationship with that player, then yeah, he's probably going to go there. Or, yeah, if it makes more sense for him and his family to go to this school versus this school, yeah, he's probably going to pick that too. There will be certain situations with some of the biggest players in the country that, yeah, it may come down to a bidding war. And you'll have these programs that slide in on the night of, or the night before, or the morning of, and say, hey, surprise, we found a little more money. Yeah. That's going to happen.
That used to happen. I mean, let's just be real honest. You know, let's take a quick look, if you're Antonio Coleman, at the situation he's been through and why he's flip-flopped so many times. You know, he was an Alabama commit. Nick Saban retires. He decides he's going to go with Auburn, and then he has a good relationship with Auburn defensive line coach Jeremy Garrett, who all of a sudden goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and then he jumps back because he had that relationship with Freddie Roach, who Alabama and Kalen DeBoer were intelligent enough to make sure they kept on their staff as a defensive line coach, right? And he's like, look, they've got, you know, and it's like this kid's getting caught and these coaches leaving or jumping for whatever reason, and he just wants to go where he's stable. I have a good feeling that this weekend, and probably what's been going on for quite some time, is that Auburn coach Vontrell King-Williams, the defensive line coach, is going to do one heck of a bonding job in reassuring Antonio Coleman and his family that this is a stable situation, and that Jeremy Garrett left because he was so good to go to the NFL, and I'm one of his proteges, and I'm going to take care of your kid just like Jeremy was going to do. But Alabama does kind of seem to have a little bit of an inside track because Freddie Roach has been up there so long, and he's a heck of a recruiter. But, I mean, like I said, this is the first time, in my opinion, in a very, very long time, Jacob, that Auburn's defensive staff across the board is equal to or not better than Alabama's, strictly because Alabama had Nick Saban and all those rock stars that came out of that defensive staff for years. I mean, go defensive coordinator in Alabama, Kane Womack or DJ Durkin, who would you rather have?
I'll take DJ Durkin.
Yeah, I mean, I will too. Co-defensive coordinator, Charles Kelly, and safeties coach.
Charles Kelly has just been—he's been killing it so far.
They've got co-defense coordinators as Colin Hitchler and Maurice Linguist.
Well, you got to think a lot of these guys that Alabama brought in were from,
and I'm sure they're solid. I mean, I'm not trying to run them down, but I'm just saying
there's a lot to learn.
Who are you more familiar with in this area, Charles Kelly or them? I mean, Charles Kelly used to be on their staff. He was an Auburn guy. He was a massive recruiter and a heck of a good coach. That was at Alabama. Now he's here. And then you bring, you know, the one, and you got McGriff back, right? And you know, he's been lights out as a recruiter for Auburn, as a defensive backs coach, right? And Josh Aldridge, defensive edge, linebackers coach. I mean, linebackers coach, it's a familiar name up at Alabama. It's that Christian, I believe it's Christian Robinson, Christian Miller. Is that right, Christian Robinson? You know, he's been around the league a little bit, down at Florida a good bit. So, I mean, look, I think Auburn can go toe-to-toe with all of these players defensively recruiting in their pitch with the staff that they have now. I personally believe by the end of this season it's going to show to be one of the best defensive staffs in the league.
I guess we'll see. We'll leave it at that. 334-321-1390. We're going to get to the phone lines as we wrap up the show when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Believe we got somebody on the phone line, so we'll see if we can get to them. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with? Maybe we don't. All right. Well, never mind then. Thought we did, but that's okay. Well, we do have phone line open in case you want to call. We got just a few minutes, so we'll try to squeeze you in if we can. 334-321-1390. You can also text us 334-784-1067. Been a great show today. Well, we've covered a lot on the show. We've gotten a lot of good Auburn football recruiting topics in on the show. Also, we're able to look at the Football Power Index a little bit more as they ranked the toughest schedules in college football, where nine of the top ten were from the SEC, which is pretty impressive, and I don't think it's really a shock to anybody that watches or covers or listens or anything about the SEC. Auburn is the fifth toughest schedule, according to the Football Power Index, and so had a good conversation about that today and a whole lot more. So if you missed it, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll have Chris Gordy, host of Locked.SEC. He'll join us in the second hour, have all sorts of things to get to. Friday, you and I will be back in here, Uncle T-Bone, and then also Lindsey Crosby will be joining us. We'll talk some baseball on Friday for our Baseball Power Hour. Been a long time since we've had him. And then are we talking about our announcement for next week and what we're going to be doing on Friday? Is that's public?
Yeah, we'll do that on Friday.
We'll talk about it on Friday?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that then. We'll hold off until Friday. It's good news. We promise. It's good news. There's nobody's leaving. Nobody's going anywhere. We got good news on Friday.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Andy.
Stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned for that as well. We got just a couple of minutes, and this gets going tomorrow. You won't have a chance to talk about it. I know you watch the NBA a little bit. NBA Finals have been set. We got the Mavericks and the Celtics. We'll be carrying the entire series right here on ESPN 106.7. As we get out of here, got a couple of minutes. You got to pick for who you think wins the finals?
Mavs in five.
Oh, get out of here. You're a Dallas guy. You're a Dallas. Get out of here.
I'm not going to talk smack like I did about the Packers.
Yeah, you saw how that worked out.
I don't really get into the NBA much, but I have been watching some of the Mavericks. And I just think, man, Boston's a heck of a good team. Ain't no doubt.
They're only the best offensive and best defensive team in the league. But
they're about to run into a buzzsaw, buddy.
Of what? Outside of Luka. What else? I mean, Kyrie's so scared to come back to Boston. He is so worried about stepping back inside a TD Garden. He's shaking in his boots right now.
Where does that – does it start in
– Starts in Boston. Yep.
They kind of bounce. Luka is a freakazoid.
Luka is going to get his, okay? I mean, that's what you have to realize is Luka Doncic
like
is going to get his.
This, like, couch potato just kind of right off the streets, right? And he just goes out there and – slowly but methodically gets going, and by midway through the game, he is taken over.
There's a video game. It's called Overwatch. It's an old school game, but it's a really like in-depth, high-level first-person shooter. Luka Doncic is top 500 in the world at one of the biggest video games in the world, and yet he's a top five player in the NBA. Like, he's an unbelievable player. And
he is a pleasure to watch play basketball.
It's unbelievable. It really is unreal. He's going to get his. I mean, he's going to drop 35 points a game. All the Celtics got to do, make somebody else beat
Luka Magic in five, Jacob.
Shut up. Oh, my.
Down goes Boston.
In five? Get out of here.
Down goes Boston.
I'm not even saying the Celtics are going to win in five. I'm taking the Celtics in seven. Celtics in seven.
If they go seven games.
Back in Boston for game seven.
The series will go on into September. The NBA basketball season lasts forever.
It lasts so long. And now you've got hockey that's playing into the end of June, too, which doesn't make any sense. But that gets going this weekend. But I want to at least get your thoughts on that as we wrapped it up. That gets going tomorrow night, Celtics and Mavericks. Again, that entire series right here on ESPN 106.7. You'll be back on Friday, so we'll have a lot of fun on Friday. Lots of things to get to on that show.
Can't wait. Can't wait to read more of your interesting text.
That's been awesome.
That's been crazy, hasn't it?
Should have done that a long time ago. We need to get somebody to sponsor that.
Yeah, I think we can work on that.
I think we can, too. He'll be back on Friday. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.